listening to Sportsnet Today on the official home of your Calgary Flames. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hour two of Sportsnet Today underway here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. I'm Peter Klein. He is GBP. You may know him from such places as the radio show that was on these airwaves 5 hours ago.
Yes.
We are still here. We are back in the deal.
Being held here. Hell.
Yes.
No, it's not true.
Yeah.
I'm hanging out. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Look, hey, you could have left at any point, but where else would you get to talk about the Calgary Flames, the Anaheim Ducks, the Medicine Hat Tigers, and the Assiniboia Southern Rebels, and whatever Strathmore Junior B team you were talking about in that last segment? Where else? The number one radio station in Calgary,
team.
Talking Junior B hockey across Alberta and Saskatchewan right now.
Bet you there are some people that were into it.
Yeah, we got a text.
Exactly.
Like I said, someone played for the Rebels in 98-99. Another one. Proud alumni of the Red Deer Vipers. Played 5 games. Got tired of getting punched in the face, so I went to university.
It's a good
probably
move.
A wise choice.
It's a good move.
Yeah.
It's a good move.
We're doing all this talking from the DL Basement Systems downtown studios for Doug Lacey's Basement Systems. We are your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. We are all things basement. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com. Coming up in this segment, speaking of getting punched in the face, we're going to talk about UFC 300.
Elite segue.
Yes.
But
I do want to talk a couple things NHL first. Specifically, holy crap, Sidney Crosby. Mm-hmm. He's not going to win the Hart Trophy. That would be insane. But this is...
Elliot Friedman's been toting that line that maybe he should be in the conversation for MVP. He's just not there with the three other guys, but Friedman's been toting that line, actually.
Like, those three guys have had such insane seasons, right? They are so good that Matthews has scored 65 goals or 66 goals and isn't going to get it. 68.
He scored 2 last night.
Oh, that's right. So,
yes.
So he might get 70 and isn't going to sniff the conversation. So... I don't think Crosby should either.
No,
not I agree. To take anything away from Sidney Crosby, because this is one of the coolest performances we have seen. He helps the Penguins to an OT win last night that has them now 1 point clear of Washington, Detroit, and Philadelphia for the final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. We can all agree that's the coolest story if they get in, right? Like Washington, maybe because it's Ovi. Philadelphia beat it. Detroit,
Washington because of Ovi. Washington because of Ovi. Also, are they going to be a playoff team with a minus 40 goal differential?
Right. Just the
That's
hilarity of
insane.
It would be great.
Insane. Yeah, exactly. Just the LOL of
yes.
It. It's just insane. Obviously, if you're just looking at it, like I loved Sidney Crosby. Grew up on Sidney Crosby. That's my era. So I love what I'm seeing with them. Everyone likes to say that Father Time is undefeated, but right now, Sidney Crosby's taking this thing. If it was a 12-round fight, we're entering round 11 here.
Yeah. Sorry, someone texted in. I played 2 years for the Mountain View Colts. I hope I'm the one that punched that Viper.
I played against the Mountain View Colts. Out in Didsbury.
I love this. Love this.
It's a tough barn to play in out in Didsbury.
I can imagine.
Was.
Yeah. Old rink in my hometown just got tore down the other day. They built a new one. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But... it's new and it's fun and it's the spot to be in my hometown.
Nostalgia.
Yeah, exactly. But back with the Crosby story, the thing that is crazy is like the last time I was here, we were talking about, oh, well, maybe they should trade Crosby. Where could Crosby end up? And where could Crosby end up didn't take us to the freaking playoffs at any point. It is so cool to see what they have done out in Pittsburgh. And it's not like he's getting a whole lot of help, right? Like Letang kind of looks cooked.
Yep.
Malkin will have some games where he looks really good, but I don't think he was particularly great last night. Carlson gets the OT winner last night after doing nothing the rest of that game. It is kind of Crosby, Rust, and that's basically it for this team right now, and they're somehow getting in.
And this team was left for dead at the trade deadline when they move off of Jake Guentzel.
Right.
And they had to sell that asset. So like it's just kind of crazy what Crosby's been able to do. Like he's got 40 goals again this season here. And it's not like Sidney Crosby has always been this massive goal scorer, but he's knocking on the door of 50 goals. He's obviously not going to get there, but it's the second time he's ever, it's the third time he's ever reached the 40 goal plateau there. He had 51 in 09-10, hit 44 in 16-17 when they go on to win the Stanley Cup that season. So he's having another year where it's just like, can this guy keep doing what he's doing? And he continues to prove the doubters wrong. moves into 10th all-time on the all-time points list, passing Phil Esposito last night in that game as well.
Eat it, Phil.
Also, Phil on the Bolts Audio Network, him as the color guy, is pretty
amazing.
Just my drop folder is filled with that. Thank
you,
Phil. It's so good. But also recorded his 1,000th assist yesterday. Crosby just making history all over the place.
Yeah, like, obviously, the stars of today are incredible, like McDavid and all of those guys. But this has been a nice reminder of how damn good this guy has been his entire career and being able to do what he is doing here. Shifting gears now, UFC 300 goes down this weekend. Admittedly, that's what I was prepping for when I got the text today asking me for me to come in. So definitely check out my podcast, Couch Potato Diary, for an in-depth preview. When I get texted an hour before or a couple hours before I have to come in, I'm going to plug the hell out of my stuff. So check out Couch Potato Diary for in-depth breakdown of all the fights. But this is one of the deepest cards, if not the deepest card, in the history of the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like the promotion did itself a disservice when Dana White was saying, like, you're not going to believe the main event that we have. It is going to be insane. Craziest main event ever. All right, hear me out. Alex Pereira against Jamal Hill. It's like, yeah. And I feel like if this is the main event for UFC 301, we're going crazy for it because this is an awesome fight.
And 301's in Brazil.
Right, which adds to it.
Yeah, atmosphere would have been nuts with Pereira headlining that thing.
Yeah, but like you have Hill, who won the title, blew out his Achilles playing a basketball game, and is now back after 9 months to regain the crown he never lost. And in the meantime, Pereira's won titles in two weight classes and has fought four. This will be the fifth former champion he's fought in 14 career mixed martial arts fights. And he is absolutely going insane in his career so far. And so I just feel like this, if they would have just said, like, look, we're going to give you one of the deepest cards of all time, we'd be stoked for it. But I feel like they almost overhyped things. We still have a great main event this Saturday. It's just not Conor McGregor against the literal bear.
It almost felt like when Dana was continually pushed that, it's just like, oh, does he have GSP in his back pocket? Does he have Khabib Nurmagomedov in his back pocket? Or some of these other legends that have been gone away from the sport for a lot of time, and like their household names, and there's guys that have sold tickets for the UFC for a long time. I'm not saying that Jamal Hill can't get into that atmosphere. He is a former light heavyweight champion, but he doesn't have that same sort of cachet to really be Pereira's dancing partner as the headliner for such a big marquee event as UFC 300.
Yeah, I feel like instead of this one being built on the star power of the fighters, it is almost the magnitude of the event is the star. And it has a chance now, UFC 300, to make one of these guys a big star, right? Because I think this is going to be one of the more watched pay-per-views of the year, this and whenever Conor fights again. This has a chance to be like one of the more watched pay-per-views of the year. And so you're going to have a lot of eyeballs. And whoever wins this main event, because we're assuming it's going to be awesome. Both these guys can throw hands.
It's not going to go to the ground, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
Definitely not with Pereira. And it sounds like Hill wants to stand in front of him. And like, if he goes down, he wants to fall on his sword kind of thing.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a pretty epic fight. I think the winner of this comes out a big star. So where UFC 100, you had the stack card, right? It was Brock and GSP on the same card. And UFC 200, they tried for Jones against Cormier. It didn't work. And they still had Brock Lesnar on there.
Yeah.
And a lawsuit after. But where those 100 and 200 were built on the star power, it's almost like the star power of this event transfers to whoever wins it, and they make a new star coming out of this.
Yeah, and I had Aaron Bronsetter on earlier on today in the 9 o'clock hour, and we kind of previewed this chat, just this card briefly. And you mentioned it there, how maybe it's not built on superstar talent. The way this card was almost built, he phrased it as like a thank you to MMA fans.
Yeah,
it's so deep from head to toe. The opening bell from the prelims all the way to the headliner is going to provide awesome entertainment. So that's kind of how he framed it about why this card is absolutely must watch. Just the depth on it is insane.
Yeah.
Like the prelims are basically must watch almost.
Davison Figueiredo against Cody Garbrandt on Wikipedia anyway was listed as the first fight of the night, which would be a fight night main event.
Yeah.
on any other situation. But no, like this card is insane. Two and a half title fights. I'm not going to call the BMF title an official title. But
what are your official thoughts on the BMF? Do you think it's cool? Do you think it's corny? Is it...
Yes to both.
Okay.
I think it's cool. I understand, like...
Does it have a place in the UFC?
Sure. Why not? It's fun. It's just these guys are going to throw down title, yeah, right? And I have no problem with that. If you want to, like, make it up, like, as long as you're not, like, throwing it around as, like, well, this is an official championship or whatever, like, then you're turning into boxing, right? Where it's the whatever championship being defended in Poughkeepsie. But, I have no problem with it. It's weird. We all understand what it is. As long as people don't take it too seriously, it's great marketing for what's going to be a great fight with Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway. Two guys who I feel like their careers have kind of followed somewhat similar paths. Obviously, Holloway has had a bit more UFC championship success than Gaethje has had. But recently, they've both had pretty high profile losses that made us kind of wonder, hey, is this guy done? Right. And then they have both of them coming off of a couple of very impressive wins that are making us realize, oh no, these two, like, all violence, all time guys still have a lot in the tank. And I think this fight coming up on Saturday is going to be just violence in the most beautiful way.
It's going to be a must watch car crash, is maybe the best way to describe it.
Totally.
With Max Holloway, I kind of mentioned with Bronstetter that maybe you said, you know, he's coming off a loss. He's going up in weight now. He's on the other side of 30 here. What's his future after this fight, win or lose? Does he stay at 55? If it is a loss, does he go back down to the 45 spot and try and, you know, regain the throne at featherweight? I think Holloway might be, when you're talking about who has more to lose or who has more to gain, I think maybe he's in a more interesting spot than Gaethje is in this title fight as well.
Yeah, because it feels like Gaethje, like, there's a lightweight title eliminator on this with Oliveira and Sarukian. So Gaethje is still probably a fight away from being a fight away for a title shot. If I'm Holloway, like, look, I am not wired like a professional fighter at all, so take what I say with a grain of salt. But if I'm Holloway, I look at the king of 155 pounds right now, Islam Makhachev. I don't feel like that guy's going anywhere for a while. Like, he is an absolute beast. He is the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world right now. And at 145 pounds, it's Ilya Topuria, who I think could also have a long reign at 145.
Listen, I didn't think anyone was really capable of stopping Volkanovski the way that he did.
Yeah.
And he absolutely proved me wrong. Oh, what a performance that was.
Yeah, because I think Volkanovski might be the most well-rounded fighter we've seen in the sport when it comes to just stringing all the areas of mixed martial arts together. And Topuria, to put it bluntly, whooped that ass. So I, like, that was so impressive. And so, like, I wouldn't want to fight either, but I would, if I'm Holloway, stylistically like my chances maybe a little bit more against Topuria, and maybe I can catch him while he's still on his way up, where Makhachev, I think, would just throw me around like a ragdoll for 25 minutes, and that would be that. And I also, again, with Holloway, I think if he wins this, he gets a title shot at 145.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think Volk's going to take some time off and maybe even move up to 155. So if I'm Holloway, a win here, I think, puts him in line for a title shot where, like Gaethje, you're behind Charles Oliveira or Armin Sarukian at 155 pounds here, and probably behind Volk if he decides to move up at 155 as well. So you're still a ways away. So I do feel like, while I wouldn't want to cut an extra 10 pounds, I feel like the path is a little bit easier at 145.
Yeah. Do you ever think that like, you're moving up in weight, you're getting used to a higher weight. At what point do you look at those 10 pounds and feel like, can I even get back there? Can I even have the same kind of pop that I had, like, when I was 25, 26, on the come up, hungry for a title? Like, that's another thing that I'm kind of curious with Holloway, because it's not like he has anything to prove anymore.
No.
You're looking at him and you're saying,
resume already.
Yeah, and you're saying he's probably the greatest featherweight of all time.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're looking at that 145-pound division, I just think his future is so, so interesting, just because it's not like he has anything to prove. He doesn't even really need to take this fight, to be honest. It's just that these two guys have similar styles, and it was just only a matter of time they collide in what should be brilliant violence on Saturday.
It's so crazy, because like you said, like, he is, I would put him at second or third greatest featherweight of all time. I think Volkanovski has number one on lockdown, but still, it's a debate that could be had. But he has still, like you said, he's proven so much, has nothing left to prove. But on the countdown show, he was like, yeah, I want to fight against the best, and I've heard this Justin Gaethje brings it, and I want to experience that. That's insane. You're he has nothing left to prove, and that is still his mentality here. And you're right, like, The like, do you want to move down and wait?
And Holloway never really has had anything in his career where his ego has really been checked. Like, when has he been rocked? When has he been stopped?
Right.
When has he been knocked down even? So I kind of understand that mentality still from
him. Yeah. And like, he loses and he comes back and puts an all-time beatdown on was it Calvin Kattar at that UFC on ABC? It's either him or Dan Hooker. I get them mixed up all the time. Either way, he just put a sound. Dan Hooker. Sorry. He put a sound and thorough beatdown on this guy in one of the more impressive ass kickings in the history of the sport. Like, he just, if he faces any adversity, he just comes back and like, okay, well, I'm just going to show you I'm the best again. Mm-hmm. And another point toward 155 pounds, I can speak to this with more experience than you can, given our age difference. Once that age starts with a 3, that 10 pounds doesn't come off as easy as it used to when you're 22, 23, 24 years old. So it's just like we saw it in boxing all the time. As guys got older, they would start moving up in weight class because that's how your body is supposed to work.
Yeah.
And in MMA, it feels like guys would keep going down, right? Like Frankie Edgar kept cutting and going smaller. Same thing with Jose Aldo. They never went up. They would always go down. I feel like going up gives you maybe a little bit more longevity. And so I do think long-term 155 is the spot. I just feel like for the next fight, the path to 145, like, could be a title shot at 145 for Holloway if he wins this.
On that, the weight cutting topic that you just brought up, like Conor McGregor is a guy that I'm not even sure if, like, the size that this guy is put on right now, I'm not even sure if he's a guy that can get back down to 155. You're talking about longevity for one of the biggest names in the sport.
Yeah.
He's a guy that's going to have to continue to move up and weight.
Even if
it's maybe not, like, he's a small 170.
Yep.
Like, it's not even, like, he's doing it just so he can continue to make. Yeah, so it's an interesting spot for him, but he's just doing it to prolong his career.
Yeah, there are so many interesting fights on here, and there's one that I want to highlight because I feel like it's getting buried a little bit. But Kayla Harrison, 2-time judo Olympic gold medalist, is making her UFC debut against Holly Holm. Now, former Olympic judo gold medalists have had a bad time against Holly Holm. See Ronda Rousey getting her head kicked off. But this is one of the best fighters to not be in the UFC for a very, very, very long time. And on the one hand, I feel like UFC 300 is a great spotlight for her to come in, feel like a star, get this big whatever. But I'm also a little bit worried that this is buried under just a mound of amazing fights that we're going to see.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this was the best introduction for her.
I think it still can be, just because you are taking on one of the marquee names in the women division. When you're speaking about the UFC in a historical sense, like, Holly Holm is a former champion, a former world beater, it felt like, in her prime. So it might be too buried. It might be too early with on in the show, where maybe the crowd is even a little dead and not fully behind it. But I think it's still one of those must-see fights to watch in this thing. And I almost kind of want to compare it to the Bo Nickel fight, almost, because I think that's a guy that the UFC brass is behind as well. I know that it's only a 3-rounder in this one as well, but I think this is also another opportunity for him to come out and really prove that he's the guy that has all the tools. He has the amateur wrestling background, a dominant amateur wrestling background. Mm-hmm. He already seems to have adapted on the feet pretty well as well. So I think this is also another opportunity for a guy like Nickel to come out and become a star as well.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with Bo Nickel, he's 5-0 in his career. These are the total fight times for his 5 fights. 33 seconds, 1:02, 52 seconds, 2:54, so a real Broadway there, and 38 seconds. He has just been running through competition. Now,
the betting odds are the same for him to get a knockout within the first minute or in the second round. That's insane.
That's hilarious. Now, only one of those fighters has a Wikipedia page, so we're not going up against the best of the best, but he has been on, I think, a pretty appropriate star-building trajectory this whole time. And yeah, like, I
kind of reminiscent of O'Malley. Ish?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Like the Dana White
Different
contender
styles,
series,
yeah.
On your way through up. Like there's comparisons even to like Conor McGregor's progression through things, right? And honestly, I think the comparison, again, we're talking about lofty comparisons here, but go back to UFC 100. One of the big names that came out of that wasn't necessarily as big of a name going in was John Jones. And he gets a spotlight on there. Obviously shows up, and then he does what he does about 28 cards later when he beats Shogun for the title. But this is one where he gets the first spot on the pay-per-view, so everyone's going to be dialed in for the fight. He has a chance for a bit of a star-making night, like you said, as well. Like, the whole card is amazing, but is there another fight or two that we haven't talked about that, that kind of stands out to you?
I mean, maybe the number one lightweight ranked contender in the world, Charles Oliveira, is on this card as well with Armin Saryukin. So I think that's another one that could also stand out to a lot of fighters. And also the women's strawweight title. There's more than just UFC gold on the line here as two countrymen also kind of competing for bragging rights as well.
Yeah, the first time two Chinese fighters have fought for a title. Zhang Weili, the first Chinese-born champion, against Yan Xiaonan, the first Chinese-born UFC fighter. Women's UFC fighter. Either way, I think that is such an intriguing fight. Yan has been training at Team Alpha Male and just seems to be getting exponentially better every time she fights. And Zhang Weili faced some adversity with the Rose Namajunas fights, came back and has won the title for a second time. I think that is going to be such a battle coming up on Saturday night. And that one, to me, feels like a bit of a coin flip right now. I do wish they had just done this fight in China. They're trying to grow the sport there. Like, it feels like this was just thrown on UFC 300 to give it another title fight. I'm happy we're getting it whenever we're getting it, because it's such a fun fight.
Off, but what would you put in its place instead? If you had, not to put you on the spot.
No,
what would be another co-main event you'd like to see?
Honestly, I would have liked if they would have, now this again requires some shuffling and whatnot, I would have liked O'Malley on this card. I feel like when you're looking at the next era, Sean O'Malley is one of these stars.
As the headliner then, you'd say?
I would have liked him, maybe even as the headliner, put him in that headlining spot against Chito Vera, who beat him before. You can kind of tell that story. Still put Pereira and Hill on this one, and you kind of could have kind of doubled it up that way. Yeah. Now, then 299 needs a main event, and you can pull, there's a lot of dominoes that fall after that. But I would have liked this one. I just, if that's a market you're trying to build in, that would have been a fight to try to build it there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I'll throw a question that I didn't get a chance to throw at Bronstetter's way, but like we kind of talked about it, that the UFC for these last couple pay-per-views in a row have just been banger after banger after banger here. And it's like, they've really stacked it up over this first couple months into 2024. Is there any worries about that maybe the next couple pay-per-views could miss their mark, really?
Yes. To answer that bluntly, yeah. Like, you look at the main event for the next pay-per-view, it is in Rio de Janeiro, but right now the main event is Alexander Pantoja against Steve Ursig, which, like, Pantoja's fun. Steve Ursig is definitely a UFC fighter that exists. But in terms of that being a pay-per-view main event, it doesn't really get the juices flowing for me in that way. So yeah, I do think that there are some repercussions from that. Like, UFC 303 has like two fights announced for it. UFC 302, I hope, doesn't have a headliner yet. It seems like they have kind of all the, the undercard fights in place, but they don't really have a headliner. So yeah, I'm a little worried about that for sure. We're up against it. I do just want to shout out one guy who's fighting on this. Jim Miller, 40 years old.
I saw this story.
Fought on UFC 100, fought on UFC 200, and is fighting here on UFC 300. Here is the resume for this guy. He has the most wins in UFC history, the most fights in UFC history, second most finishes in UFC history, second most submission wins in UFC history behind Charles Oliveira, most fight time in UFC lightweight history at 6 hours, 32 minutes and 47 seconds that he has spent inside that octagon. He made his UFC debut at UFC 89 on Spike TV on the untelevised prelims, which is where we were at, kids, at UFC 89. Y'all had to buy the DVD to watch these prelim fights or hope it showed up on UFC Unleashed like 8 months later. In the main event of that, Michael Bisping, who's a commentator now, fought Chris Lieben in the main event. Also on that card, Dan Hardy, who's also a commentator, and Chris Lytle, who fought at UFC 26. So it is absurd, the resume of Jim Miller. He wants Bruce Buffer to announce him as Jim Bleepin' Miller. That will not happen because the fight's on ESPN, but give the man his dues, because that is a wild resume. And he's going up against Bobby Green, who's been a pro since like 2005. So some old school violence coming up on Saturday. So I 100% think you should be very excited for UFC 300. And I love that it is under the Sportsnet banner one more time. All right. That is going to do it for our UFC conversation. GVP, that was a blast.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. It was great. Not too many opportunities to chat some fights here on the station. But,
right?
You know, you're probably the man to do it with. So it was awesome.
I would like to think I am, but, you know, that I'm
going to crown you. You know, I'm going to give you that title.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And if you want more in-depth breakdown, it's on Couch Potato Diary coming out later on today, wherever you get your podcast or on YouTube. When we come back, it is time for you guys to have your say. If you thought, you know what? A little bit too much Junior B hockey talk today. A little bit too much UFC. I want to ask Peter and GVP.
More about Junior B.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of us can speak to that better than the other one can. But when we come back, it is time for y'all to have your say. It's the Friday DMs. Cam's going to read them for some reason. And we'll ride into the sunset on a Friday here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Anyway, it is Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday, whatever.
What?
Welcome back, Sportsnet Today. We're bringing this one home here on your Friday. I'm Peter. He is GVP.
Yo.
Totally not thrown together at all randomly program.
Doesn't sound like it.
No. Peter. There you go. See?
I love that.
Right?
Hell yeah. Rowan.
I don't love that you're first. But, you know, we'll work on that. We'll workshop it.
All right.
I'm kidding, of course. We come to you from the DL Basement Systems downtown studio here today on your Friday. We are getting ready for Friday DMs. Send in your texts. Look, there aren't going to be a whole lot of times that I do this segment, and I sure don't think there are going to be a lot of times GVP does this segment.
Almost never.
So this is a rare opportunity for you to ask either of us anything you want. From what I gather, it doesn't have to be sports related. And you know what?
Literally anything.
Yeah, wow. Anything you want. Even if it was supposed to be sports related, I'm the one with the microphone. I'm saying it doesn't have to be sports related. If you just want to hear an old story from when I was on here the first time, or if you want to know anything about wrestling or whatever GVP likes, you can text it in at 960-960. I will say, if we don't get any texts, if I leave today with the number, with the top text on the line being seriously PK, you're the best. Hey, you know, it's not the worst thing either. So, but no, we would appreciate your texts here. We are going to get to those in a second, but, Cam, we have some audio from Clayton Keller. Obviously the Arizona Coyotes situation, is in flux at the moment. And we haven't heard a lot from the players around the team until today. We have, Clayton Keller talking about the whole Arizona Coyotes situation. We'll play that for you now.
Clayton, I think we're all wondering what it's like in that room. Can you speak to that for us?
Yeah, I think, you know, we showed a lot of resiliency last game. You know, obviously there was a lot going on, and I thought we did a great job of, you know, just keeping the noise out of the room and focusing on the last four games and going, you know, day by day.
Andre said to me the other day that he can identify the start of the slide that you guys were in because it was the day that the Salt Lake story first broke, and he asked you guys to find your way out of it mentally this time. Is that true? Did you sense that in the room then?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely in our heads, you know, just, you know, you can say it's not a distraction sometimes, but obviously, you know, just buddies, family, you know, people are always texting, you know, keep, you know, putting it in your head. So, you know, Bear said, you know, like, we have, you know, another opportunity to kind of deal with the same thing and, you know, learn from our, you know, past mistakes.
How important is it that you'll hear from your general manager today?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we've just tried to focus on, you know, hockey. And, you know, since I've played in Arizona, there's always been a lot of rumors and stuff like that. So I think, you know, we've tried to do as best we can to, you know, just focus on hockey.
For a lot of people, it's, you know, the hockey is kind of the thing that gets the focus, but there's so much that is behind the scenes, from families, to, you know, workers in the organization, all that. Like, this is big behind the scenes. I imagine you guys feel some of the weight of that too.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. You know, like I said, we, throughout this whole time, there hasn't been a ton of discussion on what's going on, I guess. So we've just kind of taken it day by day. We've, you know, heard different things here and there, and, you know, none of them are really true. So we just kind of learned from that and, like I said, just take it day by day.
You've been through this in Arizona a few times. Maybe not exactly this, but a version of this during your career, you must have this pop up.
Yeah, definitely. And like I've said, I think, you know, myself, you know, tried to, you know, help the other guys and the guys that have been here a while, you know, Lawson Krause, Nick Schmaltz, you know, if, you know, whether it's different owners or, you know, moving from Glendale to Tempe or things like that. So, yeah, I think you just try to, you know, focus on the hockey and, you know, I still have an amazing job and love what I do. So I'm thankful for that.
So there's Clayton Keller. I would say GVP handling that situation about as well as you could. I think we haven't heard a lot from the top. It's just been a lot of reporting, which you can understand. They're not going to come out and say, oh, yeah, we're screwed, or anything like that. But it does put these players in an uncomfortable situation right now.
Yeah, I mean, like, what else do you really want Clayton Keller to say, right? Like, there's still games to be played throughout the rest of the season here. The Coyotes obviously aren't playing for anything, but, like, what else do you want them to do except say that they're confused, they're handling this one day at a time, and they still got a job to do and show up on the ice, even when all they're hearing is rumors and reports, et cetera. But the crazy thing is that it seems like these reports are gaining traction, and this thing is moving a lot quicker than maybe a lot of people expected.
It certainly seems like that snowball is building, and it's not building toward Arizona. It's building out toward Salt Lake City. But yeah, like, I don't know what he's supposed to say. Like, oh yeah, no, when I saw the Salt Lake City Olympics when I was four, it looked great. So
yeah,
sign me up.
And he's also not going to trash Arizona's situation, even though I'm sure there are a good chunk of players who won't come out and say it, but I'm just speculating here, obviously, but like they're playing in a college rink, you know, and that's just not a good look on the NHL.
No, it was cute for a minute, and Mullet Arena is a fine stopgap for a year.
Yeah,
but for it to be the plan for 2 years and then we'll see about next year is embarrassing. And enough is enough with this whole situation. So I feel so bad for the players. I feel so bad for the fans out there and the people who work at the arena and make a living off of Arizona Coyotes hockey. But
another narrative, too, is that it's no secret the NHL does have interest in expansion beyond just a relocation to Salt Lake City. Who's to say that Arizona's just not promised another team right away when they do get this situation sorted out?
No, for sure, right? Like, you could absolutely see something like that happening. We've seen it at times in other sports, like the Charlotte Hornets move away, and then they come back as the Bobcats, and now they're the Hornets again because a guy named the team after himself. But, like, we've seen that happen in other situations before. Winnipeg leaves and comes back. Atlanta's going for the hat trick in a little bit. You could absolutely see something like that. And we'll just see. Like, you need a building there, first and foremost. And then we'll build off of that. All right. We have, as we would say in the industry, tap danced enough. And we have a few texts that have come in for the Friday DMs. So, Cam, hit it.
Who still uses that old mailbox? Time to bring it into the 21st century. Your burning questions answered on the Friday DMs.
Love that.
It's the first time I'm hearing that.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I tune into your guys' show.
What do you mean?
I don't know why you're looking at me. You guys, as
faithful listener GVP.
Yeah, exactly. Live and on podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever
Apple,
you listen,
Google, Spotify, etc.
Right?
Yeah,
wherever you listen to Couch Potato Diary, you can listen to this on podcast. Anyway, Cam, what do you got for us here on Friday?
GVP, I'll let you decide if you want to answer this or not. But Shubes wants to know, what's your full name?
I got a question for Shubes. What is Shubes short for? But it is Garrett Vanderploeg. It's a long Dutch name. Sometimes the nickname is just easier for some people, namely George, to just say Garrett Vanderploeg. But yeah, that's the full name.
Do you just call him G then? GR?
Call him Sheriff.
Oh, okay.
The morning.
That's
fair. That's
fair
what
enough.
You call him.
PK.
Yes.
There's no name on this one. Name and location on text, please. But are you glad the bloodline is broken? And what do you think of the main event on night two?
I thought the main event of night two was perfect. 10 out of 10, no notes. All of WrestleMania, save for the Usos match, was absolutely phenomenal. And basically perfect. The Bloodline story might be the best story in the history of wrestling, and I am including the NWO in that, just because the ending to this was a whole lot better than the NWO just kind of fading away. And I do think now it sets up Rock against Roman, Rock against Cody, rematch of Roman against Cody. I think you built up Jay as a main eventer, you built up Jimmy as a main eventer, you built up Sami Zayn as a main eventer coming out of this as well. I would say LA Knight and some others kind of got a big spotlight because of this. And I'm very interested to see where the rest of the creative goes now, because the Bloodline branched off into so many different stories, but this was the appropriate ending and just a phenomenal way to enter a new era in WWE.
This one also doesn't have a name on it, but I can't not read this. How many PKs does it take to drive a quad off a mountain?
That apparently, I answered that question. That answer is one.
Yeah, just one.
Yeah, just one. I don't like. I told that one on my first go around here, so I don't want to go too in detail on it. But for those who don't know what that's in reference to, I went on, it was a joint bachelorette party in Mexico, because myself and my now wife and her sister and now husband are, we all got married in 2019. And so we all did our bachelorette parties at the same time out in Mexico, invited out all of our friends. And then on one day, it was my brother-in-law, Eric, and my wife's bachelor and bachelorette. And the next day we kind of shifted it. So it was mine and my sister-in-law's. And for Eric's, we went on a ATV ride through the jungle / tequila tasting out in Puerto Vallarta. And this may shock you. I'm not really the rugged outdoorsy folk. Okay. I know the beard may suggest otherwise.
I can't grow one, so fair play to you.
But I am not. I don't know what type of person I am, but I'm not that one. This was my first time ever riding an ATV. And I handled myself pretty well. We're going through. There were cows, some amazing views, and seeing a different part of Puerto Vallarta than I thought we would. We got to the final area. You go off, you have a bit of a hangout, you get to see the mountains and see the area, and it's, all right, let's hop on the ATVs. This is the end of it. Go around one corner, ride over this bridge, and you'll park the ATV, and you can go off for a little bit more of the tasting. There's a restaurant, and there you go. The guy in front of me went a little bit faster than I was anticipating, and so I tried to catch up, and I ran around the corner way too fast, I get up on two wheels, tilting over to the left, and I'm like, this isn't gonna go well. And so I bail and I go flying off of this thing, and I am then expecting to feel crunch, crunch, crunch of this ATV rolling over me. But apparently, in my haste to jump off, I just kind of like kicked it back onto its wheels, but it was still
taking off,
it was still going, and it went straight off a cliff. And it was like the way they have it set up, there are trees. And then there is about an ATV-sized hole. And then there's a fence that takes you along the bridge. And I just happened to dead-eye that thing right through the hole and off of a cliff. And one of the guides went over, and he just looks over the hill. They're like, hey, can you get that? And he looks over and just shoulder shrugs like, nope, it's gone.
Gone forever.
So, lesson here. One, don't make me ride an ATV. Two, always get the insurance. Because the group before me, the guy was messing around, drove into a tree, cost him $2,500 American.
Ooh.
Me, $10 insurance, and I was good.
Boom. I need that deductible.
I sent an ATV off of a mountain in Mexico. I gashed up my entire face and knees.
How long ago was this?
This was in 2019.
Okay.
And the funny thing is, my sister-in-law is a nurse, and so we were out there with a bunch of nurses, and they're all giving me like concussion tests and stuff like that. Probably got some sort of traumatic brain injury, but that would be 9 for me, so whatever. That is the story. And one part of it I didn't know when I was telling it at the time. The only thing they told my brother-in-law was, oh yeah, his ATV went off the cliff. And so there's a picture of him standing up going, what? And it's actually kind of chilling because he thinks I've just died in the jungles of Mexico on his bachelor party.
You need more context to that.
When all I did was Tom Cruise Mission Impossible kick that thing off of me and send it off of a mountain. So that
respect.
That is the ATV story.
You got a future career as a stuntman.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
This one's from Brad Nerdry. What led you boys to the glamorous world of sports radio, and where did you guys study? Always curious.
I'll let GVP go first because that was just a lot of talking by me.
Well, I grew up a sports fan. I grew up playing almost every single sport I could ever get my hands on. I played hockey up until I was 21, played junior hockey as well, played baseball all the way up until I was 20. Basically, all the people I have in my life, all the people that I continue to talk to this day is thanks to sports and the people I've met throughout my entire journey growing up as a young kid, just loving sports. And that led me into a passion of trying to make sports a career. And I studied at Mount Royal University right here in Calgary, did the 4-year broadcasting program, graduated just last summer, and here we are.
I went to an entirely different school. I went to Mount Royal College. It was a 2-year diploma at the time, of which I completed a year and a half of, and then got an internship at a 3-letter network that's showing the masters right now, and so decided my last time in college, I probably didn't need the rest of that. And then I got a full-time job out of it, so it paid off. But the reason I got into sports broadcasting is at a very early age, I was sure of two things. I liked sports, and I wasn't good at them. So I thought talking about them was probably the best way to go about it. And I love, like, what I'm going to do when I go home is spend probably 3 or 4 hours watching UFC fights, analyzing them and figuring out who I think is going to win, and then trying to explain that in a somewhat relatively entertaining way, depending on who you are. And I love everything about watching a game, learning something about it, and then trying to convey what I learned with a touch of hopefully entertainment along with it. So that is that's my story.
As for myself, I didn't actually think I would be doing sports coming out of uni. I went to U Lethbridge to study music and like audio production and like music production. So I thought I was going to be some sort of like big music dude and like helping people record music and stuff like that. And then I graduated and I'm like, oh yeah, it's the music industry. That's not going to happen. So I kind of got into kind of the world of broadcasting and like audio for sports and stuff like that. And lo and behold, here we are. And I told our boss in our interview, you know, I might not be ever the guy in the room who knows the most about anything sports wise, but by God, are your podcasts going to sound so good?
Didn't go into the volatile world of music to go into the much safer world of AM sports talk
AM
radio.
Sports exactly. Radio. I know.
Nothing bad happens in that. I can tell you that for free.
This one's from Matt and Cochran. Hey, PK, why did no one behind the scenes in AEW talk Coney Khan out of the self-own of showing the all-in footage? To me, it kind of corroborated what CM Punk said, and now just makes me wonder how much more of the Hawani interview is an accurate representation of the company.
Yeah, it didn't do themselves any favors. And there's cuts out there of CM Punk describing it, and you play it up with the video, and it's basically exactly what he said. And what's very frustrating is there's been a lot of the talk of, oh, well, they popped ratings. Yeah, but the rest of the show kind of sucked. Like, it wasn't the best representation of AEW anyway. And it just, whenever you're drawing comparisons to 2000 WCW and 1996 WWF, that's not a good thing. So, no, this was a giant mistake from AEW all around, and it really does highlight how much they've gone from the alternative to kind of just almost sometimes feeling WWE light, and that is not a great thing. They have amazing performers there. Okada, Ospreay just brought in along with Mercedes Moné. The Young Bucks are still incredible. Their match with FTR is going to be one of the great matches you'll ever see. Like, they have so much talent there that they need to refine the storytelling a little bit, and they need to stop getting caught up in this kind of BS, because it is absolutely setting the company back.
All right, this one's from Mitch and Airdrie. Boys, what year do you think the Flames are relevant again?
Ooh.
I'm a big believer of the, you know, the team wants to be getting ready for, you know, pushing into the playoffs by the time that new arena is built. So like 2026, 2027?
Yeah.
About the timeline that we're expecting that arena to be up and running. Maybe 27, 28. That would be probably my bullet point for when I would expect to see this team competitive again and pushing for a deep playoff run.
Yeah. What about you, GBB?
I just think that this team is going to have to draft in the top 10 at least once to three times to really, you know, grab some young face-ier franchises. When you're talking about a Flames team right now that just doesn't have a game breaker, where do you go get those at the top of the draft? And yeah, I think that this draft is fully loaded of high-end blue liners that they could probably get if they're so lucky enough to get a guy like Carter Yakimchuk. I know that he's projected in the top five even, but Flames are around that eight-ish spot right now. So yeah, if for some reason that he's made available, I think that would be a really good fit. I also think that this Flames roster, their prospect system, doesn't really have the other premier position really lined up, that being the centerman spot. So I think they're going to need some really young game-breaking type talents, and you're going to have to get that in the top of the draft. So I might even extend that window to a bit beyond. Maybe I'm talking like 28, 29.
Okay. Just for reference here, the Flames are at 75 points. Arizona behind them has 73. Ottawa has 74. Montreal has 73. Now, Ottawa and Montreal play each other, so it is safe to assume one of them will win. Unless they just drop the puck and it explodes at center ice. So if the Flames lose tonight, Ottawa and Montreal, they play each other on Saturday. One of those teams will win and leapfrog Calgary. So that gets them, like, if all the teams behind them, directly behind them, win once, then they all leapfrog the Flames and Calgary would be in a top five spot, which would be amazing. amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, just to kind of do the timeline, I think next year will basically be the same as this year, probably even a little bit worse. I think the year after that, you start to see some improvements. So that's, we're now 25, 26. 26, 27, I think they'll have the, these are kind of meaningful games, but we know that this team isn't making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then 27, 28 is what I'll say. 27, 28, I think.
And by relevant, are we talking about being like, you know, a team that's projected to be a playoff team year in and year out, and then from there on, like, being a division winner? Or like, what do you think would be the exact term of relevant?
Yeah,
is that back to like division?
I would say probably pushing for a second round, at least, playoff run.
Fair.
I would say out of the wild card, right? Like, yeah, into that, exactly. A top three spot in the Pacific would, yeah, be my assumption. Or things go totally south in Edmonton and they sign Draisaitl and McDavid and just roll from there.
I like it. This one's from Brett and Red Deer. What would you upgrade, the soda vendor or the popcorn vendor first for your MVP 2005 ballpark?
See, I always get caught with the, well, it, like, you want to sell more tickets so that you can sell more of your merchandise. So I always build the seats first, and then I always lose my team in 3 years. So I would say go for like your merchandise stand where you can sell like the jerseys and stuff, and get one of the food vendors that sells a bunch of different things, so you can bring in that revenue a little bit quicker. But if we're just asking popcorn versus soda, the people got to have something to drink. So I'm going to say that the soda vendor first.
This one's from Nate in Calgary. PK, were you surprised that Logan Paul kept the U.S. title?
A little bit. Like, he is the like biggest star, and for being someone who is kind of a social media guy and a celebrity, he has taken this really seriously, and so like you appreciate what he's done. But I thought they'd want the title on TV maybe a little bit more regularly, so I was surprised. Yeah.
Isn't SummerSlam in Cleveland this year too?
It is.
And he's,
yes,
from Ohio.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense as well, maybe.
Yeah, that's just a long way away.
Yeah.
And like I don't know if he's going to be on as regularly between now and then. But we'll see. He is going to have a prominent spot. And again, he has taken it so seriously and is actually an incredible athlete for someone who made a living with YouTube and stuff like that.
Okay, very last one. Paul in Chestermere. He says, prime time. So good having you back more often on the AM dial. Since we're talking wrestling, give us your thoughts on what will be WrestleMania 41's main event.
Man, the easy answer is Gunther against Cody Rhodes, which I think would be fun. I think they do Rock Cody at SummerSlam. I think it'll probably be Rock against Roman at WrestleMania 41. Now that I'm talking my way through it, it'll probably be Rock and Roman at WrestleMania 41.
All right. That'll do it. Wrap it up there.
That was fun. First time being in on that. That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this was a blast. And obviously when I'm here, the wrestling questions tend to flow and I tend to get a bit chatty. So I'm sorry if I took the air out of the room on that one.
Little wrestling. I don't mind.
All right. Well, good. Yeah. Appreciate it. All right. Appreciate all you guys texting in and all of you who will immediately go listen to Couch Potato Diary, wherever you get your podcast. We are Sportsnet today, coming to you from the DL Basement Systems downtown studio. Make sure you check out the Eric Francis Hour, Eric Francis Fridays for horse racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly. I could hype up Eric. You know who Eric Francis is. The guy is an absolute legend around these parts. You don't need me telling you who Eric Francis is. Just check out his show every Friday here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. All right, it's Flames game day. Warm-up is at 7. Puck drop is at 8. Flames talk is at 4. All of it here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Have a good weekend, everybody.